today, we are going to kind of zero in on the original design for humanity. What did God mean when he made us? And I don't think this is a question that we sit around talking about very often. I don't go to coffee with my friends and think, let's discuss what it means to be human. That feels like the right thing to talk about today. That has never happened for me. I'm guessing it hasn't for you. But I actually think we have a story about that. I think that you and I both have ideas about what our life should be like. I think we have ideas about what it means to be human and what things should happen while we're alive and what our life should accomplish. I think we actually do hold a story about that. And sometimes we only see it when it kind of oozes out the cracks, like it did for me one day, a year, maybe a year and a half ago. I can't actually remember what circumstances were taking place in my life. I wish I could. I would tell you if I could. But what I remember is something I yelled at God. I was driving through my neighborhood, and I could probably take you to the exact spot on the street. I was that overwhelmed with whatever I was feeling, which was confused and frustrated and just like kind of aggressive toward God. And I yelled at him, I feel like a pawn in your cosmic game. I yelled that at him. Maybe not my finest moment honoring him. However, maybe it was. Maybe that moment of honesty is what took me someplace different, because what I was saying to him is, I feel insignificant. I feel weak. I don't know what you're doing. And I think that's where we confront the story of whatever we think is supposed to be happening. I don't know if you play chess, but pawns often get sacrificed. They're the weakest piece on the board. And that's how I felt in that moment. But today we're going to look at what if our life was never really meant to be about us? So let me pray before we go any further. Lord, I pray that you would be with us in this time and that you would help my words to be both true and helpful, and that we would all know you better as a result of being with one another today. Amen. There's an assumption that I just want to say out loud, because the community that we're in, we welcome people with beliefs all over the spiritual spectrum and genuinely welcome that here at Crossroads. But the one thing you need to know about our conversation here today is that my ingoing foundational belief is that there is a creator who created humanity, who created all the things that we see in our world today. And I know the reason that I state that is because I know we live in the same culture. I know there's a big debate and there's a lot of different perspectives about whether and how something or someone created the world. And for our conversation today, you should know my strong belief is that not only do I believe, but I believe the Bible teaches there is a creator who created. And because that's the premise for our conversation, we're going to look at what did that creator mean to do when he made us, when he made humanity. And to begin, we need to go back to the point where the creator created. See, he had an objective. He had an objective with all of creation. And that objective was this word called glory. God's objective was to fill the earth with his glory. And that word appears all over the Bible when you look at different things that were written about not only the actual story of how God created, but others in the Bible talking about it. Through the Psalms, we hear things like this: heavens declare the glory of God, and the skies proclaim the work of his hands. In the prophets and some of the books, we hear things like the whole earth is full of your glory. His splendor covers the skies and his glory fills the earth. What exactly is that? That word doesn't help me. I'm a language kind of girl. I like words that help me understand. I like words that are clarifying, that I can look at and understand better. And glory is just not one of them. It's sort of purposely obtuse. It like combines all these different things about God and who he is and what we can see and know about him. And so the best I can come up with is that glory is something like the brilliance, the amazingness, the perfections of God put on display for all of us to see. And when we look at the story in Genesis 1 of how God created the world, what we see is that brilliance. It talks about God speaking light into existence and creating day and night, sky and sea and land and all the animals that would fill all of those places. And the word that is used for all of that was glory. And it was something like this.
Mm-hmm.
when I watch that, I start to get the tiniest little inkling of what glory really means. But God wasn't finished because we haven't talked about us yet. He says that the crowning glory of all his creation was actually humanity. Above and beyond anything that that video showed or that anything else represents, he says the humanity was the pinnacle of his creation. So let's read about what it says in Genesis 1, 27 and 28 when God created us. So God created mankind in his own image. In the image of God, he created them. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." God created humanity to actually take charge of all the rest of his glory, to be the top of it, and not just to babysit it, but to actually make it grow and flourish. He says, multiply, increase. Our job was to increase the glory of God on the earth. So pretty much the opposite of what I do with the plants that I put in my pots on my deck every summer. Now, let me tell you how this goes for me. I get really excited in May because the weather's nice and I can be on my deck again and you can see it from my kitchen and my living room. It kind of goes across the back of my house. And so I have these big pots and I fill them with all the pretty flowers that you can get in May and they look awesome. And I take really good care of them and I water them all. In June, I do a pretty good job. And then July comes and it starts to get hot. And I'm like, you're not looking so good. And I'm working just as hard. This isn't working out for me. And so I get a little bored with them. I don't pull the things off like I should. I probably water them a little less instead of a little more. And then we go on vacation and I go, you know what? I got my money's worth. I'm totally fine. We're just going to call it. I don't want to pay some kid to come water these. We're done. And so I live August without them, and there goes my summer plant. Every single year I do that, every year. And so God pretty much meant the opposite of that. He wanted us to take care of all the rest of his glory, and he didn't just want us to leave it the way it is. Our job was to increase the glory of God. Can you imagine that? And it was going to work because God created us with something special. Genesis 1 says he created us and only us in his image. He gave us special qualities that we were going to need to do what he made us to do, to manage and increase the rest of his glory. And he says, this is going to work because not only are you like me, but we're going to be in relationship with each other. So my joy is your joy, and my strength is your strength, and my wisdom and how to care for this is your wisdom. And my authority to do whatever needs to be done here is your authority. God created us with a very specific objective, and it was to increase his glory on the face of the earth. I can't really imagine what that would be like. It's really difficult now sitting here today because all we know is what came after. What came after was sin entered the world, and we're not going to tell that entire story, but the result of what that did was make our job basically impossible. It separated us in relationship with God, and it took away that special connection that would have allowed us to sort of do what he made us to do. And honestly, I watch that video, and I think climbing those mountains would be amazing, but I would probably die. And I really love those animals, but I would prefer they be behind a fence at the zoo. And I used to have this little vision in my head when I was a little girl. I would think, one day when I meet God, and I really did think this a lot, one day when I meet God, I wonder if we could swim in the ocean together. And honestly, when I go in the ocean, I just want to go in if it's clear, because I want to see. I don't want anything to touch me, because I really don't know what's in there. And this is how we feel about creation now. And it almost seems like a common experience, but it wasn't the way it was supposed to be. And so the question for us today, really to wrestle with, is, so does that mean the purpose of God has changed? Did he call an audible when things went bad? Did he write a new playbook? Did he somehow redesign the very purpose he had for humanity? And the answer to that is no. Peter, one of the New Testament writers, one of the best friends of Jesus, he actually wrote in one of his letters that we are called to the eternal glory of God. The purpose for humanity to increase God's glory on this earth, it has actually never changed. And so God, as you would if you were a creator, think about anything you've ever made, anything you've ever made in your life. If it doesn't turn out the way that you thought it was going to turn out, you've got two choices. You can either pitch it out, crumble it up, throw it away, get rid of it, and start over, or you can find a different way to the outcome that you were hoping to get, to the purpose that you set out with. And that is what God did. God had another path to the original glory that he meant for us to participate in with him. And I think we can get a glimpse of this in the psalm that we actually worshiped to earlier. Psalm 8, I love this psalm. It's called a creation psalm. And it's just, so the psalms, if you haven't read them, are like a book of songs and poetry that were written to try to express things about God that are hard to put into another form. And this Psalm 8 puts into words something that we need to know about both the creator and his creation. And if we look through it, we can see that God had another path to this glory, a new, an unusual path even, to the original glory that he created us with. So I'm going to read to you the first few verses of Psalm 8 again. O Lord, our Lord, how majestic, your majestic name fills the earth. Your glory is higher than the heavens. You have taught children and infants to tell of your strength, silencing your enemies and all who oppose you. When I look at the night sky and see the work of your fingers, the moon and the stars that you set into place, what are mere mortals that you should think about them? Human beings that you should care for them. Yet you made them a little lower than God and crowned them with glory and honor. You gave them charge of everything you made. The writer here says, I see the assignment is the same. We're supposed to be in charge. We're supposed to be increasing the glory of God, which he gave us to share in. But what are we now? He says, who are we now that you would think of us? This is thousands of years after the creator created, and it's obvious to whoever's writing this that something is wrong. And he says, now when I look at the moon and the stars, we seem so low. And who are we that you would now think of us? Yet somehow, we're still in charge. And I can't help but mention the second verse. I'm sure it feels awkward or weird to you too, right? You've taught children and infants to tell of your strength. It just kind of pops in there out of nowhere. Everything else sort of seems to hang together, but that one seems a little bit random. But if we look closer, the writer of this psalm is saying something is going on, that the weakest, the lowest are in charge, that babies are defeating enemies, that broken man is still supposed to be ruling over God's creation. This doesn't make any sense, but this is the new path. This is the only way that we still have a shot at fulfilling our original purpose, because if I could just amend our previous statement that we were made to increase the glory of God, I would say, we are made to increase the glory of God through our weakness. And that is what this writer is pointing out. He sees there's an unusual path to the original purpose, and it is straight through weakness. I want you to hear this in another part of the Bible where it's described in the New Testament. 1 Corinthians chapter 1 says this, brothers and sisters, think of what you were when you were called. Not many of you wise by human standards. Not many were influential. Not many of noble birth. But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong. And I want to tell you, when this became very real for me on a random Wednesday afternoon, I had gone home early from work because our hot water had gone out that morning. I really hate a cold shower. And so we had somebody coming to fix it, and the doorbell rings, and I was there, and in walks the hot water heater repairman, and he introduces himself to me, and his name was no less than Butch. So Butch comes in and he says, I'm here to fix your hot water heater. And the first thing he does is say, I'm really sorry about my English. And his word's not mine. I'm just an old hillbilly. That's what he tells me. And so I need you to have a visual of Butch. He's smaller than me, much older than me, fully tattooed. And he has a big flat-billed hat on with like fresh sawdust all over it, probably from whatever job he just came from. So I say, hey, Butch, come on in. And he goes down to my basement, and I continue with what I'm doing. And Butch comes upstairs about half an hour later, tells me he fixed it. We're in the kitchen doing the thing. We're signing the form and all that. And he's telling me what he did. And I was looking at some of his tattoos, and I asked him about one of them. And to explain to me where he got it and what it was, he had to then explain to me that he had spent a good chunk of his early adulthood in prison. And so he begins to tell me about his time that he spent in prison and why this tattoo and all of that. And he says, I hope I'm not offending you. And I said, I'm not that easily offended. Go on, you know. So he goes on and he tells me about something significant that happened to him one night in prison. And he says, there was somebody who came into my cell. And he said, I'm pretty sure I was asleep, so I think I dreamed this, but it felt so real to me, I'm not totally sure. And he said, there was a man, and his name was Jesus. And he came to me one night, and he said, it's not too late to honor your father. And his eyes filled with tears, like right in my kitchen. And he said, told me about what kind of shame he felt that he had brought on his dad by going to prison. And he said, whoever knew to say that to me, I wanted to know more about him. And so he started telling me how he had little by little figured out who Jesus was and what that might mean for his life and tried the best way he knew how to follow him. And he also shared with me that he was like a master electrician. He had all kinds of skills with his hands, and he was there long enough that they would let him work on things at the prison. He knew how all of the alarm systems worked, and he kind of got a little smile on his face, and he knew how the automatic doors would operate. And he said one day somebody became concerned that maybe he knew a little too much, and then he stopped cold, and he said, I would never do anything like that. And he said, that would have dishonored my father. And by this time, I was like, who are you? And so I keep asking him questions, and he tells me when he gets out, and about one night when he rode out on his Harley, and his intention was to take his own life. And there, that guy named Jesus, he shows up again, and he ends up kind of singing this song about Jesus, and he sang me a line of this song that he sang that night on his Harley, that he decided actually not to end his own life. And he starts to move toward the door. You know, you do the thing where you're like, you move a foot and then you talk some more and then you move another foot and you talk some more, and that's what we'd been doing for like 20 minutes. So finally we're at the door and it's time for Butch to leave, and I'm going, this can't be over. Who are you? And so I say, all I can think to say to him is, would you pray for me? He has no idea who I am, doesn't even know my name. And he turns around and looks pretty surprised, and he was like, well, yeah, sure. And so he prays for me. I don't remember what he prayed. And then he turned around, but this part I remember. He turned back around right as he was stepping out the door, and he put his hand on my forehead, like kind of forcefully but fatherly, and he grabs my head, and he says, Lord, use her words to bring other people to you. And I was totally stunned by this. And he goes, well, you know, have a great day. That's going to be working out for you. You know, and he closes the door and leaves. And I'm just standing there. I'm standing there going like, I think God was here. I'm pretty sure he was, actually. And I was stunned, and all I heard was in my ear, this little whisper. It was actually inside me, not audible or anything, but all I kept thinking was, good job not missing it. Good job not missing it. And I thought this over and over. If I had been like a minute busier and not asked him the question that I was curious about, or just a little bit snobbier, I would have missed it. I would have missed the glory of God, not only uncovering it, but actually getting to touch it, actually getting to have some of it. And guys, this is what God does with his glory. This is the new path. This is the way that he does it. He wraps it up in all the brokenness. He wraps it up in some old tattooed hillbilly, and he sends it into your house. That's what he does. It's unbelievable. And the reason that Butch stood there in the glory of God was because he was weak, but because he met Jesus. Jesus is the guy that turns weakness into glory. That's what he does. He came as a baby. He came as the weakest of weak, and he lived a human life full of weakness, full of the need to sleep, the need to eat, the feelings of rejection, the feelings of temptation. In any way that you feel weak, he felt weak, except for one. He had a connection with his Father that you and I were never able to have. We could never have without him. And when he faced the ultimate weakness, death, not just death, but a shameful death, he did not dishonor his Father. He went to that grave, and we call that, for some weird reason, the path to glory. We say that through the cross was his path to glory. And then 3 days later, when he comes up out of the grave alive again, we call the resurrection his glorification. Because that was the moment. That was the moment that he beat the ultimate weakness. And he is the only guy that can ever do this. He turns all of our weakness into glory for God. That's why I didn't want Butch to leave my house. That's why when he walked out the door, I was like, come back. I want some of whatever you have. I need to have more of that. Because it was the glory of God. Humanity is still about increasing the glory of God. He just does it a different way. He does it like he did it with Butch. He does it straight through our weakness. And if we want to live a life that feels right to us, that feels like a satisfying human existence where we don't have these feelings of like, what am I doing here? And what is God doing? And what's the point of all this anyway? Then we have to learn what I would call a new way to run. I love to run. Lately, I haven't been able to. I've been experiencing quite a few injuries, and I actually went to this guy a while back, and he was like a stride specialist, and he watched my stride when I run because I kept getting hurt down my left side, my hip, my knee, my foot. It was always seemed to be on my left side, and he goes, yeah, you're going to have to learn a new way to run. And I was like, a new way to run? Don't you just run how you run? And he was like, you can run how you run, but you're going to keep getting hurt how you're getting hurt. So you need to learn a new way to run. And so it was so bizarre. I understand from some of you that play golf, it's like somebody changing your golf swing. Like you just swing how you swing, but no, you don't. You can change it. And we have to learn a new way to run. And the good news for us is that weakness is the perfect place to be. I said that I had gotten hurt lately, and for me, lately, weakness has looked very physical. In the last year, I have fractured my heel, I've punctured a lung, I've broken a rib, I've had a shoulder rotator cuff injury, I'm still struggling with severe tendonitis in my right elbow. I've had all kinds of physical weakness, and I wonder what yours is. Maybe you just have a job that takes it all out of you, and you come home, and you just have nothing left, and you feel weak in that way. You just don't have anything, any capacity left after your job. Maybe you're dealing with some situation that leaves you emotionally exhausted, and it's been going on a long, long time, and you're just over it. And that feels like weakness to you. Or maybe you're dealing with a sickness or an injury like I am, or maybe your plans for something, maybe long-term plans have just gotten canceled or thwarted or delayed for the fifth time or the 10th time, whatever kind of weakness you're facing, I know what the world is telling you. The world says, cover it up. Don't tell anyone about that. Just put your best foot forward. Project strength. Just display your strengths and don't worry about your weaknesses. And also, be ashamed of that. Be ashamed of that. And God instead invites us to consider a new way to run. He says, I would like to be in those places with you? What if those points of weakness were the very secret to feeling like our life was being fulfilled in some sort of purpose with God? If we want to learn a new way to run, then there are two things I think that we need to do. And one we need to start, and one we need to stop. And I'll start with the start. I think we need to start giving Jesus access to our weakness. We have to fight against that thing that tells us to cover it up. Every single time I go to tell someone about some ugly part of my past, I hear that little voice that says, "Don't talk about that. What is wrong with you? It's in the past." Or maybe you hear that voice that goes like, "You don't need to deal with that. You're so good at all these other things." We want to protect ourselves because we don't want those things to be visible. And we have to choose to let them be. I don't know if you know this, but I co-host a podcast we do here at Crossroads. I co-host with another woman, Latasha, who's great. And we've done 3 seasons. Actually, season 3 just launched this last week. The podcast name is IKR, and that just means, I know, right? It means, like, I feel you, we're in this together. And the night before we launched season 1, so last year and a half or something ago, I called Latasha because I freaked out. It was already loaded, iTunes, Spotify, wherever you get podcasts, it already had it. And I freaked out and I called her and I went, "It's not just you and me in a room with a microphone. Like, thousands of people are about to hear this," because episode 0 was us telling our story and going like, here's kind of who we are. And probably some of the ugly stuff too. And I freaked out because I had that moment where I went, "Wait a second. I'd like to just keep some of that covered up." And this season, we actually started with a woman who might turn out to be my favorite guest, although Brian wouldn't like me to say that because he's one of our guests this season. But she was amazing. She actually told us about her own story of being a star in the adult film industry and how she came to know Jesus and wanted to cover up her past. And I want you to listen to her episode if you would, because she describes her interaction with God where she realized, "I can't do that. If I want him and I want the life that he has for me, I can't spend it trying to cover up all the mess that came before me. I have to stop. I gotta open my mouth and make a decision to not cover it up anymore." We have to start giving Jesus access to those places. Tell yourself first and then tell him. It's really, really important. And the second thing we need to do is we need to stop something. And we need to stop trying to build our own strength. The world around us says, build glory for yourself. And I don't need to explain this to you. You live in the same world I do. We're supposed to be beautiful and accomplished and bright, and we're supposed to achieve renown for all of our amazing achievements through our riches. It's all supposed to go that way, and it's all about building glory for ourselves. We have to stop that. And it's so important that we stop, because it's mutually exclusive with experiencing the glory of God. It's absolutely opposed. They cannot exist together. It's either one or it's the other. And somehow I think that we think our weaknesses are going to dishonor God. So we want to cover them over with strength or something or accomplishment. And he says, please stop doing that. Your weaknesses don't dishonor me. They actually give me a place to show who I am. Butch was amazing, not because Butch was amazing, but because he gave God access to all the messed up crap in his past. He was amazing, but God was the one who was amazing. And Jesus tried to tell some people this, actually. He tried to explain this idea that these two things are totally opposed to one another. And he did it by quoting the same psalm that we've been looking at today, Psalm 8. And I want you to hear what he says. Here's the scene. We're going to go to the book of Matthew. And here's the scene. Jesus is coming into Jerusalem for the final time. He's on his way, pretty much where we are, on our way to Easter, where he was on his way to the cross. And he comes into Jerusalem for the last time. And the first thing he does is he goes to the temple. And the temple was the place of his Father's glory. The temple was the place where the presence of God was supposed to be, where the glory of God was strongest and best seen for everyone to come near. And instead, what he finds is a bunch of people working for their own. He finds people making idols, making money, changing. He calls them money changers. And business people were outside his temple, and they were working for their own glory. And he gets really mad. And he starts overturning tables. He's super angry. You can imagine the scene. This doesn't happen around the temple. And so people scatter. Like, the temple kind of empties out, except for two groups of people that stayed behind. There were two that were not pushed away by his behavior that day, and the two were the weakest of the weak and the lowest of the low. They were the kids and the blind. And I want you to hear what he does. Matthew 21, the blind and the lame then came to him in the temple, and he healed them. The leading priests and teachers of religious law saw these miracles and even heard the children in the temple shouting, "Praise God for the Son of David." But the leaders were indignant. They asked Jesus, "Do you hear what these children are saying?" "Yes," Jesus replied. "Haven't you ever read the scriptures? For they say, 'You have taught children and infants to give you praise.'" He quotes Psalm 8. And then he returned to Bethany, where he stayed overnight. He knew they would know what he was saying, because he knew that they knew what the end of that verse says. Do you remember? That children, the praises of babies and children, were going to defeat the enemies of God. What he was saying to them in that moment is, you working for your own glory, you are the enemy of the glory of God. It cannot happen together. You can't see me because you're working for your own. And these kids, they see me just fine. Just fine. They know exactly who I am. The kids and the blind and the lame, they aren't morally superior people. They just simply had circumstances in their life that had pushed them into the place where they couldn't work for their own glory. And I've been here with God. And I know some of you have, or will be, or are right now. And sometimes it feels frustrating, and it feels almost insulting. Like, I have more to give, and why can't I give it, and why am I not, and why doesn't this work, and all of those things. And he said, what if it's a gift? What if he's trying to push you into the place where the kids were, where the blind were, because they could see him and they could actually receive the glory that he came to give them? I want to do something as we finish up here together. And if you're anything like me, all you can think of now is all the ways that you're weak. They keep running through my head as we're talking. I could get off on all rabbit trails if I had time, but I think the reason that I remembered the moment in my car and that it stuck with me is because it felt like a moment where I yelled at God about my weakness, where I finally was able to kind of push through and go, "I'm weak and I don't get it and I'm frustrated with you. What are you doing?" And any moment where we can push through into that kind of honesty with God and admit the place that we're weak and the thing we don't know, I think that's when things start to shift, because that's where the glory of God starts to creep in to our life. So if you today are feeling like you can identify any place of weakness in your life, I just want you to bow your head with me. And if you are really ready to be honest with God about this, and maybe to stop covering it up with strength, then I just want you to look up at me. And for those of you that are looking up, there's going to be a prayer on the screen, and I want you to repeat after me and just pray this really simple prayer. Jesus, I am weak. I want you and your glory in this place. I'm willing to let you clear anything in the way. Please do this so I can live the life you made me for. Amen. I just want to invite you to stand up and tell God one more time through song that we want the purpose that he has for us and for our life. Thank you. When you wrestle away this heart, when you wrestle with